This is Talk Is Cheap on KBW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. Okay, this week I went out to Eugene Makerspace. Eugene Makerspace, this is from their website at makerspace.org. Eugene Makerspace is first and foremost a community space to share ideas and skills rather than strictly a tool rental space or trade school. While we provide access to tools relating to electronics, fiber, art, woodworking, and other maker categories, most instruction you'll receive is informal, meaning it's just friends that you meet there might help you with stuff. But you got to make friends with people there, and that's what it's all about. Tool upkeep also depends on our members, who are encouraged to contribute their time and expertise toward the common goal of keeping EMS running smoothly and sustainably at EMS. We all pitch in where we can and seek the assistance we need to grow as makers. Currently, membership fees go 100% towards rent and utilities. As our membership grows, any individual funds will go towards space and equipment improvements, consumables, etc. EMS is entirely volunteer-led with absolutely no paid staff. Your membership literally keeps the lights on. Board President Sam Foster is an open-source software developer and reformed sculptor and fabricator. He likes to make things and help other people bring their ideas into the world. They have a new facility at 3890 West First Avenue in Eugene. In the entranceway, there's a regular bulletin board and a screen showing an online bulletin board used for communication between members.
And they go up to Broadway, and they go along Broadway and come back down.
So they're not on bicycles?
No, okay. Exactly. Well, no, it's all unpowered, so there's no cars or anything. But you've got people walking, people dancing, you've got people on horses, you've got people on bikes.
Oh, wow.
People on crazy contraptions.
Eugene Bright Parade.
Yeah.
An after party.
It's a lot of fun, actually. And it's... They got their permit again this year, which they were a bit worried about. So, yeah, welcome to the Eugene Makerspace. We're open to the public always on Tuesday evenings. We have a standing kind of open hack night where people can just come in, see the space, meet people, hang out, work on a project. And we're open throughout the week for members and drop-ins. We're a membership-based organization, so we have about 40 or so pay members right now that kind of keep us afloat, pay for our rent. What I normally do with a tour is I'll just go through each of the rooms. We're out on West First. It's kind of an anonymous building. Seems like mostly people find it. We've got a big lit LED, green LED sign on the outside. Hey, welcome. You'll see people coming in throughout the evening. So we've walked into the main room here. We call this the Proto Lab. This has got most of our 3D printers, our laser cutter. We've got a small electronics bench here for doing soldering and small repairs. And we've got a couple of members here working on a project right now. They're doing some work for their market store, cutting some acrylic using the laser cutter.
Any questions?
Let me see, what else? Next door here.
Yeah, we're really happy with how far we've
got.
We've
got Fiber Arts Textile Lab. So this is set up for doing, we have an industrial sewing machine, a couple other regular sewing machine, a serger, got a small embroidery machine. Space to lay things out and do paper crafts, and we've got all the small tools you expect, the glue guns, the heat presses, and so on and so on. Got a little space to hang out here. We have some supplies. Usually we ask people to bring not to expect us to have all the supplies. We might have it, but we do ask people, if there's a particular thing you're working on, you probably want to bring your own stuff. And if we have it too, then all the better.
Great.
We do have some art on the walls. We've been participating in the Warehouse District Art Hop. That is basically the day after the First Friday Art Walk downtown. So this popped up last summer, and it's been happening every month. So if that's not a thing you're aware of, you should check that out too.
So not necessarily a member, but you're displaying art.
Yeah, well, we participate. We sign up every month, get on the map. They publish a little map that shows all the different participating venues around this area. Mm. And so, yeah, we're on that map. Most of the artwork here is either members or friends of members. So it's kind of our immediate circle. And we try and rotate it out every month, so there's at least something new for people to look at.
Nice.
So we're back in the Proto Lab. The other thing I do show people on a tour is we've got our calendar. This is basically just our website that shows when we're open. So any of the hours here, you can expect someone to be here. So if you want to just drop in and get a tour, ask some questions, that's how you'll find us.
I found it pretty easy to find, too, calendar.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right on there.
And then we also have a Discord server for our online real-time chatter. It's just a message board kind of a thing, which is optional. But, you know, it's a way to get a question answered if you're just online and you can't reach anyone right now.
Oh, and tips for how to use the equipment?
Tips for, you know, questions about, like, hey, I've got this broken thing. Do you think I'll be able to fix it? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. Yeah.
But this isn't for reserving space or whatever. You'll get into that.
Some of the systems we have set up, some of them are still kind of, we're figuring out exactly how we want to do, like build the system for like reserving tools or scheduling training on some of the tools that we have. Mm-hmm. So right now that's pretty informal. You'd probably just do that either in person here at the space or online on the Discord server.
Nice.
Okay. Let's go through at the back. So we have basically the front offices, which tend to be clean and dry, and sorry, not clean and dry, clean and quiet-ish. The back is more kind of traditional workshop space, right? So we've got the beginnings of a wood shop here, and we've got this, we call this the versatile room, the versatile space. It's basically just a workbench and a big layout table. This thing is, what is that, like 4x10, 4x9,
right,
something like that?
At least.
So that's really nice for like laying out all the patterns for your project, or like if you're cutting big sheet material or fabric or something, it's been really handy.
And so the comparison of the noise that you're talking about is you're going to hear a drill or a saw or something like that rather
we,
than...
We try to avoid making dust, sawdust, in the front.
Where the sawdust, 3D printer is.
Right, and all the electronics and all the things that get gummed up. Yeah.
Do you need... I can stop anytime you want.
No, I was just wondering, are you guys setting up anything here or can I put a sewing machine out here?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay.
You want to do it here? You need the space? If you can use this one, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's just there's one outlet extension cord. I can use that. Is that okay?
You also have more lights here.
Should
we continue?
Yeah, if you can. Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing we've got in here, we've got some member storage. So we don't have a lot of storage for people's projects. So we ask if people are working on something, they kind of need to take it home with them at the end of the day. We don't really have a lot of space to leave things set up. But we do provide these big totes if people want to leave some tools or some supplies here. So that's for the members to use. We have the beginnings of what will become a fume hood here for resin work, 3D printing, the smelly stuff, basically. If you're in your garage, you might just open the door, but this is, we don't have access to the outside air here, and it's a shared space, so we want to vent all the fumes directly outside, so that's getting set up in a fume hood there. Next door here is the wood shop, so we are a applying for a permit to build an interior wall here to try and contain the noise and the dust and give ourselves some extra wall space for the wood shop. Permit application is ongoing, so we're in the meantime we're just kind of getting the dust extraction and stuff like that set up. But we have most of the tools that you'd want here. We've got a table saw, we've got a jointer, we've got a planer, we've got a drill press, we've got a bandsaw, and a bunch of hand tools and stuff as well. So
nice.
It's not a big space, but most of the things you'd want to make, you know, small cabinetry or small wood projects are here. And we do have like air filters and the dust collection units. And an air compressor as well for air tools. That's about it, I think.
See, no CNC machine.
No CNC yet. We have a space for it. We have a fundraiser online. We've got a link on our website. We've got one picked out. We're about halfway towards the goal to be able to buy it.
And it looks like a plotter over there. I'm sorry.
No, that's right. Yeah, we've got, this is a large format printer. It's basically just a giant inkjet printer with a roll. It does work. We've printed a test page. It needs someone to come in and fiddle with it and figure out how to get files onto it and, you know, get the rollers exactly aligned and so on and so on.
And then I was at your old space on McKinley and you had like a bunch of, you don't have the space for it, obviously, but you had a bunch of junk that people could pull out for bricolage and
right.
And
we used to have the
repurposing.
The pick apart.
Yeah,
that was kind of cool. My vision for this space, we're in the versatile room where we've got these sort of heavy-duty sort of metal shelving. I kind of want those shelves to go all the way up to the roof because I see this as being, you know, like the Aladdin's cave of everything.
Oh, God, yeah. You could put a loft in here, huh? Easily.
Maybe a loft or maybe just like a library ladder with the big shelves, you know. But, yeah.
And so what are these plywood scraps over there?
There's just some extra sheet material. Some of that will go into the fume hood. Some of it is just being kept out of the way of the construction area that is the wood shop right now.
But I mean, that's not for everyone's use, really. That's
not really. No,
you're going to use it for the space.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Storing sheet material is always a challenge, right?
And then you didn't have classes before, but I see there's a soldering class. We do not know how to solder worth a damn.
We're going
to
do it again. We did the soldering class. Was it last week? Was it last week? Uh-uh. The soldering class? It was, right?
Yeah.
I'm pointing. He was at the class. We sold out, actually, and we got a pretty good response, so we'll do that again for sure. That was just a basic introduction, like cleaning the tip of the soldering iron, how to maintain the iron, how to tin it and wet the solder, get the joint, you know, for through-hole stuff.
And then for electronics, I found that I need 45 watts to do electronics. You need a really hot tip, I guess, do electronics.
Yeah,
is the trick
45 or even 60 sometimes?
Because otherwise, you melt while you're waiting for it to heat up. You end up melting the insulation. Yeah, it's taken me 20 years to figure that out.
I know. You want to be the soldering should only take a second or so.
Yeah.
If you're having to linger on there to heat it up, you probably need a bigger iron.
Yeah. So any other classes? What about sewing? I got to learn mending someday.
We want to get. These things, look, we're a group of volunteers, right? I should probably say that. The Homemaker Space, we're a non-profit, registered 501c3. That we have no staff at all. Everything we do here is on someone's volunteer time. So the soldering class that we did, the instructor actually donated his time. He did a bunch of prep and stuff, but he came in. We want to do like sewing class using the serger, using the commercial industrial machine that we've got. Some of the tools that we need training for, just because you can hurt the tool or hurt yourself or hurt the space, like the laser cutter. They love to burst into flames, those things. So you got to know what you're doing to use them. You have to like turn on the vent, and there's a whole sequence you got to go
through. Got to be smarter than what you're working with.
Yeah.
But, there's a whole safety thing that you need to go through. We don't want people getting hurt.
We don't want to vent, like, you know, chlorine gas into the space, and all of those things are possible with a laser cutter. So that we have a short kind of induction thing that we go through just to kind of certify people that they know, you know, how to use it, where to get more information, the safety procedures, what happens if you do, something does, you know, catch on fire. We got like a blanket there and so on and so on. But yeah, we want to do more classes. Well, what I was getting to, we want to do more classes, but we need people to instruct the classes, right? Some of those people will be members, but they don't have to be. You know, if someone wants to come forward and say, oh, I want to teach a class on, you know, whatever it is.
Like, right, so if you have a lifetime of knowledge that you want to impart to someone?
If you make signs and you want to show people how to use the vinyl cutter and to make their own signs, that would be great. I would love to learn that stuff, you know. Half the tools here, I know how to turn them on, I don't know how to use them. So I need someone to be the instructor. But between us, collectively, I think we have a pretty deep pool of knowledge. But that is one of the things we're looking out for, is people to come forward and say, you know, come do a tour, basically. Come look around, see if you're inspired by something. See if there's something you want to learn, something you want to teach.
And the sky's the limit here, too, basically, if you want to... No atomic bombs,
I wouldn't say the United States. We have some very different limits. So I guess one of the frequently asked questions is, do we have a mill? Do we have a lathe? Can we do welding here? The answer right now is no. We only have so much space. And when we looked at how we were going to be able to partition it out, we just had to just draw a line through all that stuff. We don't have a safe place to do any kind of welding or hot work. So that's the thing that we used to have that we do not have anymore. We have to be careful, obviously, about doing dangerous or illegal things. As a 501c3, we also have to be careful about what is happening within that we're hosting. If anything overtly, anything like illegal or political in nature, we have to be careful about. We have some conditions around our 501c status that we have to be super aware of. So we do try and keep an eye on what's going on under the roof and make sure we're having a conversation about stuff where you're like, maybe you should do that somewhere else, you know?
And then, but you might get advice, though, from someone.
You might. We come from all walks of life, you know.
What about, wasn't there a tool lending shed here? I thought somebody has a tooling shed. Are you connected with anybody else that
you
is just, similar organization?
You just saw him, actually. The guy that was in earlier is one of the people that runs the Eugene Toolbox.
Okay, that's what I mean. Yeah. I got to get over there.
That's up in the Friendly area right now. I think they're looking at maybe opening another spot. Somewhere in North Eugene.
And bicycles or whatever, too. Is this easy to... It's a little difficult to get out here, I think, maybe. But I was thinking about it. I think
cycle
I could get
here.
A bus out here.
Buses are a little tricky. You have to... The only bus service... There's one that comes to Bertelson.
And can backtrack.
It's a long... It's like an hour to get here from downtown. Uh-huh. But if that's your only option, then that does get you pretty close.
And you could kind of spend the whole day here anyway. You could show up here or whatever. I think I've seen classes as early as 3 or whatever.
We have, some of our hours, we try and connect them up. So if someone's going to be here, you know, from 3 to 6, then 6 to 9. So you've got a pretty good block of time there.
And maybe carpool with somebody, too.
I'd love to get carpooling going. It was, we spent about 8 months trying to find a new property. Just to lease, like we're not even trying to buy.
Right, but you got to keep the rent down. I imagine this is cheap rent out here.
We had to keep the rent down. We needed a flexible. We needed what we have here, which is we needed some walls, and we so having some clean space as well as some warehouse space. Most of the industrial commercial units, it's just a big, it's a big warehouse space basically, and they might have a little office box that is 10x10. So it took a while to find this, and then finding a landlord that wasn't spooked by our business model. They're like, wait, so you're a non-profit and you're like a club and you're like a workshop. Quite a few of the property management people didn't get it. And
right, I mean, you have to have fire alarm here and everything too. I don't want to get into your legal.
Then we had the fire at the old space.
Oh, I didn't know this. Yeah. I didn't want to get into that necessarily.
No, I mean, that's
But that's just it. You want to be able to blow something up here without hurting the neighborhood. I mean, there's...
We don't want to
I'm
blow
joking,
anything
but,
up.
But
this, however, one of the reasons...
You don't want this in somebody's neighborhood house. I don't
one
think,
of the
really.
Reasons this building worked so well was it used to be a paint factory.
So there's plenty of chemicals
so
here, yeah.
The landlord is like, you know, good luck hurting this building, uh-huh. You know?
But you don't have to worry about any toxic fumes. I can see that they painted it or whatever. There's nothing here that
right,
is going
right,
to hurt you.
Right, exactly.
Any more than any other industrial space.
Yeah, it's an industrial space. And we're an industrial area, which means we have neighbors that are in manufacturing and stuff like that. And I think that works quite well. It is a bit of a hike. I cycle here from downtown. And it's, you know, it's about 30 minutes or so ride downtown. We got parking, we got bike lockups. Apart from the Bertelsmann one, the bus, you're walking from West 11th, basically, which is 10 blocks, you know.
Yeah, but Fred Meyer's not too far, or whatever.
Fred Meyer's not too far, Lowe's, Home Depot, all that stuff is pretty close. Yeah,
right,
it's, you know, it's trade-offs, right?
Anything else? I see the website. The meetings are every Tuesday. I notice at 6.
We do this every Tuesday.
But you're kind of flexible.
We've got events popping up in the evenings. So if you just keep an eye on the calendar, we'll drop in on our Discord server.
So it's okay to drop in on an event or whatever without being.
Yeah. I mean, there's a point where if you're coming in and working on a project and taking up space and using tools, we're going to ask you to get a membership.
Yeah.
Tuesday is always open though. Right.
Okay.
If you can get your project done in 2 hours, you could just come along and work here all year long.
Well, because, I was going to have somebody help me. I have a 12-volt project, and I cannot get this 12-volt timer to work. Not today or whatever, but, I mean, maybe somebody could help me with a 12-volt timer or whatever.
Yeah,
not
I can't commit.
No, no, but, I mean, I might run into somebody at some time.
But likely there's someone here. I know that I'm expecting someone to come along today. They said they had their toaster oven just stopped working. So it might be a fuse, might be something's blown in the power supply, so we'll take a look at that.
But, I mean, there's people that want to do that for fun.
I think so.
They do that because we're not talking about paying you or anything like that.
I just want to set expectations that if you show up with a thing that is broken, someone might be interested in helping you with it, but we're not here to do that for you, right?
Okay.
So...
But people are happy to give you advice
as long as it's not affecting
their time.
Yeah.
Interfering with
that. do you mind?
I mean, it's an atmosphere
people,
like that.
It is. It is. People are here just for the fun of it, to learn things, to make things.
Okay. Anything else that I'm missing?
I think that's all I got. Just keep an eye on our calendar. We post up events on there, and we'd love people to just drop by and take a tour.
All right. Thanks. That was.
All
right on.
Save us. Save us. Save us. Save us. Save us.
Greater Kurdistan not only boasts extraordinary ecological richness due to its diverse ecosystems ranging from rocky mountain ranges to fertile plains, but this richness also holds immense global ecological significance. This vast area encompasses diverse ecosystems from the rocky Zagros and Taurus Mountains through the fertile Mesopotamian plains to the dense forests of northern Iraq and western Iran. It is a bioregion to an exceptional array of flora and fauna, including over 6,000 plant species, of which at least 2,500 are endemic. According to the essay, The Kurdish Ecocide, Environmental Degradation Across Greater Kurdistan by Dawood Razuli Kaya and Evan Aden, in eastern Kurdistan, the last two decades have seen significant environmental degradation, particularly deforestation and land degradation, affecting parts of the Zagros mountain range. Human activities, tree pests and diseases, and climate change jeopardize the richness of ecosystems such as oak forests and wetlands, thus affecting the biodiversity and livelihood of this region. Unsustainable logging for fuel wood and charcoal is the primary driver of deforestation, especially in the Kurdo-Zagrosian oak forests. Rural communities have shifted their dependence on forest resources for economic reasons. Illegal logging for commercial gains has also added to the decimation of forest cover, with almost 15% loss between 2000 and 2020. In addition, agricultural expansion and overgrazing lead to deforestation by clearing forests for farming, followed by soil erosion and increased river sedimentation. As a result of this dependence, the local economy relies heavily on livestock, making overgrazing common as herders overstock pastures, limiting alternative income sources. Over 40% of Zagros forests experience grazing pressures, which has detrimental consequences, including the loss of plant biodiversity. Attempts at combating deforestation and degradation are unsuccessful because of weakness in environmental law enforcement and the lack of involvement of local communities. Reforestation efforts are in place but are highly underfunded, often using non-native species. Forest fire is one of the most serious forms of ecocide in eastern Kurdistan. The forests in the Zagros Mountains were highly affected as they became strategic areas for military operations. There was widespread deforestation due to deliberate burning and artillery fire that destroyed key habitats for wildlife and reduced livelihoods for rural communities dependent on forest resources. A 2024 video by the Union of Asian Catholic News shows the nursery in Sarchinar in the Kurdish city of Sulaymiyya as part of efforts to battle the destructive effects of deforestation in the region.
This plant nursery, located in Sarkinar, in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region, is part of efforts to battle the destructive effects of deforestation in the region. Experts say 50% of forests have been lost in Kurdistan in 70 years. The loss is catastrophic, as the Kurdistan region is home to 90% of forests in Iraq, which has been among the hardest hit globally by climate change and desertification. Supported by the World Food Programme, they hope to regain the lost vegetation in the territory.
بوی زورترین کاریگریکان لناوچی کاریگر کارتکران با گورانی که شو هوا و کمبونوی باران و زیادبونی پلکانی گرمی و بشه کتریشی لناوچه سنوریکانن که با های جنگ و آوانه و کاریگری لسر دروز بوا.
Much of this comes down to illegal tree felling and forest fires, intensified by summer droughts, as well as military operations on Iraq's northern border.
وبشی کیشی بهوی ظروف اقتصادی و نالباری بتایبتی نا راستی نا وتکانی حریمی کردستان لسدای رابردو دک قیرانی دارایی و گرانی هبو خلق لجات نوتی دز ندکو دچو داری دبری.
According to two official studies, between 1957 and 2015, more than 600,000 hectares were lost in Kurdistan. Over the last 14 years, some 290,000 hectares have been hit by fires. A decrease in forest supervision resulting from conflict and displacement, and rising temperatures and drought provide fertile ground for forest fires.
هوکاری اگر کوتنوکان بگومن مروین یعنی کم حالت سرشتی بید چون که کم تر لورزی هاوین علای ایما بلاین که ورزی و شکبونی پوش و آوانه پاوانکان مانا بلاین کاریگری و کور بروسکا یان شورتی کاربا زیاتر هوکاری مروی انجا هندک جار کم تر خمی زوره
In the nursery, the oldest in Iraq, some 40 varieties have been developed to later be planted in forests or given to farmers, among them pines, cypresses, junipers, and oaks, the emblematic tree of the Kurdish forest. With production support from the World Food Programme, micro mesh nets were installed in the nursery to protect the trees from the sun, accelerating growth and minimizing evaporation. Other greenhouses have been equipped with hanging sprinklers, which are more water efficient. The project has helped Sarkinar's annual production grow from 250,000 sprouts before it began in late 2022 to 1.5 million in 2024.
The productions, we are reaching our target of 1.5 million. Whoever works from the community, from the government or non-government entities running a kind of greening campaign, it will be supported. The production annually it's reaching 1.5 million in Sachnar, Sydney.
Authorities are working to cultivate new forests and to increase nursery production, though they lack sufficient human and financial resources. Civil society has also got involved. In Sulaymaniyya, which is encircled by hills, activists are fighting bulldozers and excavators, eating away at the slopes of Mount Goija for a real estate project. On the edges of the city, luxury housing complexes and shiny glass towers are already rising on the hillside. In the regional capital of Erbil, a campaign launched by local organizations aims to plant 1 million oak trees.
اما تا ئێستا لە پرۆژەی لە چوارچێوەی پرۆژەی چاندی ملیۆنێک دابڕ و توانیمانە زیاتر لە 300 هزار دار بچێنین لە ناو شاری هەولێر کە زۆرترینی داری بڕووە و لەبەرچێت لەبەر ئەوەی داری بڕوو دارێکی ڕەسەنە خۆڕاگرە کەمی ئاو دەوێ و لەبۆ گۆڕانی کەشوهەوای بە یەکێک لە باشترین دارەکان دابنرێ و بەتایبەتیش لەبۆ ناوچەی ژینگەی کوردستان دارێکە زۆر زۆر گونجاوە
Elsewhere in Kurdistan, forests have been the collateral damage of fighting between the Turkish army and militants from the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK. This summer, Kurdish media and organizations said Ankara's bombardment of the PKK triggered several forest fires. In late June, the Turkish Defense Ministry accused the PKK of lighting fires to reduce visibility and conceal its positions. Amidst natural and man-made disasters, the experts in Kurdistan continue their fight to revitalize the dying vegetation, a critical element needed for humanity's survival.
You can find out more information on the forests of Kurdistan at the Kurdistan Botanical Foundation website at www.kbfiq.org. That's the Kurdistan Botanical Foundation at kbfiq.org.
actually agree on how many nuclear bombs have been officially detonated on this planet. Which is weird, because when a nuclear bomb goes off, it's usually a pretty big deal. There was the first one in New Mexico that everyone knows and loves from Oppenheimer.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Then there was the two that the Americans dropped over Japan at the end of World War II.
The force from which the sun draws its power has been loosed against those who brought war to the far east.
There's three. Then there are the other, less movie-worthy ones. The US conducted another 1,028 nuclear tests. The Soviet Union did 715. When you add the UK, France, China, India, Pakistan, and North Korea to the tally, you end up with 2,058, which is the official number of nuclear detonations. The thing is, though, the real number is actually 2,059. Maybe.
On September the 22nd, 1979, an American spy satellite detected a double flash in the South Atlantic consistent with a nuclear explosion.
The double flash came from somewhere near the uninhabited Prince Edward Islands, about halfway between South Africa and Antarctica. Strange electromagnetic signals were picked up at an observatory in Puerto Rico. A few weeks later, unusual radiation readings started showing up in the thyroid glands of sheep grazing in parts of Australia. Usually when something like this happens, the leader of one country or another will soon come out and announce that they are now in the nuclear weapons club and you better not mess with them. But in the case of this incident in 1979, no one has ever owned up to it. Experts are pretty sure they know what it was, though. One country that we all know has nuclear weapons, but still steadfastly refuses to acknowledge it.
While Israel denies it possesses nuclear weapons, observers believe there's strong evidence to the contrary.
The recent war that broke out between Israel and Iran was based on the agreement among most countries that the Islamic Republic of Iran can't be allowed to have nuclear weapons. The question that logically follows is, why does Israel get to have them? Of course, Israel's response is, we don't, along with this promise.
Israel undertook upon ourselves not to be the first country to introduce atomic weapons in the Middle East.
We won't be the first to introduce nuclear weapons into the Middle East.
And to this day, Israel has never taken responsibility for that particular nuclear explosion.